an atom of this, or and please take a look here. Did you see this decay chain? It's not
the bottle of champagne.
It's not the bottle of champagne, the cork hitting the ceiling and everything.
Mark Stoyer, thank you so much for coming in today and speaking with us.
It's been my great pleasure. Thank you.
Mark Stoyer is a nuclear chemist at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. So the elements, some were born in an atom smasher, and most were born in the stars. Some disappear in a flash, but most will hang out for at least another 10,000 billion billion years. The nature of an element is fixed, but its quantity can sometimes change drastically. Just ask the cyanobacteria.
Well, it's elementary. We couldn't do the show without the production help of Gary Niederhoff and Barbara Vance.
Also, thanks to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, a nonprofit scientific and education organization whose scientists study the origin and nature of life. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to the episode Elements Never Forget. And if you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science, well, you'll find lots of episodes in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio because, you know, there's always an element of risk that static will drown out the show, well, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like this show.
And if you listen to our show via iTunes, we invite you to leave a review on our iTunes page.
And to reach us directly with your comments, just be sure to throw in some faint praise and then email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
They've dropped ropes out of the nose of the ship, and they've been taken hold of down on the field by a number of men. The Zeppelin has landed safely. Another ho-hum day here in New Jersey. Oh, the banality!
This is WHFR Dearborn. You are listening to the magic of radio.
The following program is pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Marie Cisneros. Marie lives in the port city of Muskegon, Michigan. Her family moved to Michigan from Laredo, Texas in the early 60s when she was only six. She worked in the healthcare field for almost 20 years with a bachelor's degree in healthcare management. Marie has always had an interest in the paranormal and UFOs since an early age, having experienced her first sighting at age 10. After an early retirement in 2006, she began to devote more time to researching the UFO phenomenon, joining MUFON that year and becoming a certified field investigator. She has investigated over 75 cases in Michigan and assisted in cases in other states as well. For the past year and a half, She's been a columnist for the MUFON Journal with her one-on-one article devoted to spotlighting MUFON investigators and officers around the country and around the world. And we're happy to have her on the line with us today. Hello, Marie.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and you?
Good. Pretty good, pretty good.
Good. And you were in Michigan, and I had the honor and privilege of meeting you and having lunch with you one day.
Yes.
With a mutual friend of ours, and Gary Golem, who's also been on the show a long time ago.
He was the
Michigan State chief investigator at the time. So we had lunch together, and it was great meeting you and talking to you and picking your brain a little bit.
It was a really good lunch.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, good company. That's what makes it a good lunch.
Yeah, that's true. Am I right? Definitely makes a difference.
Okay, so you told me you had your first UFO sighting when you were 10 years old. And would you tell our listeners about that incident?
Yeah. Let's see. I believe I was about 10 years old. It was in the summertime. And like I said, like you mentioned, I live in Muskegon, and this happened in Muskegon. Up until recently, there was a power plant there called the BC Cobb plant, and the sighting was over that. I know it was late at night, and I remember just looking out the window and seeing what was an obvious craft, you know, over the power plant, and I can remember it clearly. It had like lighted windows, and I kept looking at that. I was like, there's little, you know, tiny windows in this thing, and it was circular shaped. But to me, in my recollection, it seemed to be going in the same direction as we were, you know, as we made our way home. So, and I've never forgotten that, you know, just I think about it now, you know, what that was, and, you know, so it's one of the things that sent me on my search, you know.
Yeah. You say it was circular. You say it was circular. Was it spinning or turning in any way?
I believe it was turning.
Very fast? Or?
No. It was just like a slow turning that where I could see small, like, rectangular-shaped windows in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what really struck me the most was that it certainly didn't appear to me to be an airplane. There wasn't anything that I'd ever... Right. Although, you know, granted, I was, you know, quite young, so.
Well, yeah, but if it was turning, no matter how fast it was turning, you would have, and if there were wings on it, you would have seen the wings, right?
Yeah, correct, yeah.
And what kind of a sound was it making?
Yeah, I don't recall it, you know, making any sort of sound at all.
Yeah.
I remember trying to get the attention of my mother and, you know, my siblings in the car, and I don't think anyone paid any attention to it, you know.
Mm-hmm. So that was your first experience?
Yes, it was.
How long was that? Now, I'm being the investigator here. How long was that in your sight?
Oh, probably about 10 minutes because from the cop plant where I used to live, it was at my grandmother's house. Mm-hmm. It was probably about 10 minutes from there. So
how did it disappear from your sight?
It didn't disappear. We went up and went into our house.
Oh.
So, and it was still there, you know, when we, you know, I remember we used to live in an upstairs apartment. So, I mean, I remember walking up the stairs and I was still watching it when we all went in. So.
Wow. So you saw the windows or portholes, as it might be. Would you describe them as windows or portals?
Gosh, that's a good question. I don't really know. You know, probably more of like portals. But I used to love, you know, fairy tales, you know, when I was younger. And I thought to myself, because it seemed to change shape. And maybe that was just the... you know, just the angle that I was looking at it, but right. It seemed to change shape. And I thought to myself, well, what kind of looks like a flying carpet
uh-huh.
at one time.
Yeah, we were talking about that. You and I were discussing that shape-changing UFOs at lunch the other day. And the fact that, you know, somebody sees the same craft, and, well, it was round. No, it was oval. No, it was flat. No, it was disc-shaped. And all as that disc-shaped object turns, different angles, it looks different from different vantage points. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely agree with you on that.
So were there any other sightings that stick out in your mind that you had?
Yeah, there's been a few through the years. Another one, I think I was around 26. I'm going to start to tell my age here pretty soon by all of these sightings and what year. I think this was in the maybe early 90s, I'm not sure. I was traveling from Ravana, Michigan, into town, into Muskegon. And there I pulled up to a stoplight, and I look, and it was probably facing the, I think it was facing west, but I remember seeing a solid copper-colored sphere just kind of hovering, you know, in the sky. And, you know, I watched it the time. It was probably 2 or 3 minutes, and it didn't move. But I had to, you know, go through the light when the light turned green. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just always wondered, you know, what that was. You know, it was reflected off from, like, the sunlight. But it was quite large, probably maybe half the size of what the full moon would be. So I'd wondered if any other people had seen that at the time. So
were you able to see portals or windows in that particular?
No. It's just kind of metallic, copper colored, you know, very definite shape to it, very solid shape, sphere. So,
Yeah. But was it rotating like the first one?
No. I remember it was just hung there in the sky.
So what other experience? We got time. We got an hour.
We got an hour to kill. Okay.
Fill it up with your experiences.
Okay. Another major, I don't know if it's called a sighting other than just maybe kind of an experience, an anomalous experience, you know, with lights. It was January 1st, which was my birthday, and I'm thinking this was 1992 or 93. I was taking my daughter and granddaughter home about 8, 9 o'clock, and my granddaughter was only like a year and a half at the time. But my daughter also remembered this distinctly, that we were headed probably south towards her house, and the street that we're going down is tree-lined. You know, it's Southern Avenue in Muskegon. So there's a lot of trees in that, but all of a sudden, just the car lit up with a bright blue light. It was so bright that, you know, you could have read a paper by, but I thought it was a police officer behind me because it was so bright. I thought, you know, someone was shining a spotlight in my car. So I look in the rearview mirror and I don't see anything. Well, by the time, you know, I turned around, you know, the light had went out, and then it lit up again. And the whole sky is just lit up, just blue, just all around us. You know, and we have no idea, you know, really what that was, you know, what was causing the light, you know, at all. But the next day when I got to work, I did mention it to a coworker, and she said that they were coming from another part of town. They were coming from the movies, and she said that she'd seen the light, you know, also. She says, yeah, we did see that, you know, but it seemed to be coming probably, if we did a any kind of a triangulation, it would have been between, you know, her and I, you know, where the light was coming from. So,
But no craft involved with it?
No, I didn't see a craft. It was just this phenomenally just blue light. And it wasn't a fast light like you see lightning. You know, obviously lightning is, you know, very quick, but it was maybe lasted like 4 or 5 seconds at a time, you know, that it would lit up. By the time I look in my rearview mirror and turn around and look, the light is still, you know, there. It's still shining in the car. So
no, it would not have been lightning, you know.
Yeah, there was no sound. Yeah, no sound to it at all. I didn't hear anything. You know, I didn't see any crap. You know, that street is very, there's a lot of trees on it, like large oak trees. So the sky itself isn't really visible, but, you know, it was also late at night, so.
Do you recall what kind of weather conditions that were at that night?
Well, it was January in Michigan. That tells you anything.
So cold. Cold and overcast, right?
Yeah, probably cold, and there was probably snow on the ground, so.
Yeah. Blue light. Yeah, blue light is commonly associated with the UFO phenomenon. I tell the story often about my sister is an abductee, and one day she was going down our hallway and going to bed, and she stopped at her door to her bedroom, and her entire room is filled with blue light. Mm-hmm. And she's standing there wondering where this is coming from because the lights were off. And next thing she knew, she's sitting at the end of the bed. The light was gone. And paying it no more attention, she got ready for bed, went to bed. Mm-hmm. Which is often the case with abductees. They just, you know, okay, so that happened.
Yeah.
Let's move on with our lives, you know?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, any other experiences with sightings?
Well, experiences, I probably had a lot of experiences that could be considered, you know, under the anomalous, you know, phenomenon, you know, things like that, like, you know, blue lights. You did mention that, you know, I worked in the healthcare field. Well, I worked third shift for a lot of years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would come home and, you know, my daughter would tell me about the storm. You know, she goes, well, it was really bad lightning storm last night. You know, and I would look at her like, it wasn't raining last night. You know, there was no storm. So I don't know. You know, she told me about the blue lightning.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that would always make me wonder, you know, about things. But, it wasn't really discussed, you know, too much about it because, you know, she was, you know, young. We didn't really want to talk about that stuff. So.
No. So, so about how many sightings would you say you had in your life? So far?
probably, I'm thinking maybe at least five.
Five, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So
various sorts.
Yeah. Was one of the most outstanding one that you have already mentioned? Or one that...
I think the one where we saw, you know, the light, you know, surrounding the car, you know, just within the car is probably one of the most inexplicable, you know, to me. Because.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't anything to me that, you know, that could be explained by normal phenomenon, you know. I mean, there wasn't anyone shining lights in our car. You know, it wasn't lightning because lightning doesn't do that. It doesn't last that long. So,
do you have any indication or suspicion that a craft was behind that light or hiding within that light and being concealed by that light?
I think that could be a definite possibility. I had known at that time, I mean, I've done a lot of research, you know, on, you know, UFO phenomenon for many years, even before I joined MUFON. But so I knew kind of what the, you know, the concept of missing time was. So I remember noting the clock when I took her home and on my way back, because my youngest daughter was there, you know. She was like 12 at the time. She was at home while I took her older sister home, who was married. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking of this missing time thing, and so I remember looking at the clock, thinking, making sure that we didn't have any missing time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when I got home, I go, okay, we're good.
Good to go,
the
huh?
The clock matches. Yeah.
There has also been cases, rare as it is, of not missing time, but gained time, where someone had been sitting in their living room watching television, and they see a light, whether it be blue or whatever experience they have, and all of a sudden they find themselves, it's earlier, and they're watching the same scene on television that they had just watched. Okay. They know what's coming up. Because,
oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I have had those kind of experiences.
Really?
Before, yeah. When I say I have had a lot of anomalous, it's kind of borders on the more psychic phenomena or, in, you okay. know, unknown phenomena.
Right.
And I guess I remember I used to, one of the times I used to babysit, and I had to get my granddaughter up for school one morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I set the alarm. I set the alarm, and the alarm rang maybe at 7:15.
Mm-hmm.
So a few minutes later, I think I fell asleep for a couple of minutes, and then the alarm rang again, and it was the same time.
Same time?
You know? Yeah, it was the same time. I'm like, okay, how did that happen? I have been, someone has explained it, that they call it a false awakening. So,
oh,
I mean,
okay.
That's a possibility.
That's,
you know,
a possibility.
It's more like a...
Yeah.
And I know there's another state that people say that they awake and they can't, you know, you can't move and you have that sense of paralysis, and they
yeah.
call that a hypnagogic state.
Right.
It's because your body is in between, you know, waking and sleeping.
Right.
Because your body normally isn't supposed to be up, you know, moving around when you're asleep.
Right.
For obvious reasons. So.
Right. They use that explanation of... what's it called? Paralysis, sleep paralysis, to a blanket explanation for the abduction experience. Well,
I agree with that.
There are many facets of abduction experiences that just simply do not apply to sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
Of course, the psychiatrists, psychologists are going to ignore those those facets, those incidences. But yes, sleep paralysis is a real thing. Is that the answer for all abduction cases? I don't think so. You?
No.
Oh,
no, I definitely don't think so either.
No. I need to... take one moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and that's 89.3 FM on your radio, and WHFR.FM on your computer. And this you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with researcher and UFO investigator Marie Cisneros. And, Marie, you also have the one-on-one, as you call it, article or column in the monthly periodical MUFON Journal. And in case one of our listeners doesn't know what MUFON is, first tell us about MUFON. You do the talking here. I talk too much.
Okay, well... MUFON is a science organization, and they've been around. They're one of the oldest organizations dedicated to the UFO phenomenon and abduction phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's the research and for education of people about the this experience or... So, I mean, as an investigative body, you know, we're looking for, are we alone in the universe?
Right.
So, I mean, if people have UFO reports, you know, this is where they go, the best place that they can go for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a few out there where you can go to report, but I really believe, you know, maybe I'm biased, but I think that MUFON... Is the best place to go for it because they look at this scientifically. They investigate. They can't, you know, most of the time they didn't see the object. But if a witness has a picture, for example, they won't just take that picture at face value. They will have a photographic analyst analyze that picture. Make sure it's not phony before they say, okay, we've got some evidence here. You know? So, it started, MUFON started when, 68, was it?
I think so. 68, 69. I think it was 69. But...
69. Well, that's, it started right when they said the Air Force is not going to deal with this anymore.
Right.
Project Blue Book determined that, you know, your Air Force is awake, you may sleep well at night. That type of thing.
Yeah.
So, but when they said that, then a group of people got together and said, well, we're not going to accept that. We're going to go on and we're going to call ourselves MUFON, Mutual UFO Network. But your specific article, One-on-One, tell us about, how did you fall into that?
Well, let me see. How did I fall into this? I started working with Cassidy Nicholas on the military archives, which is we're looking through the database, you know, finding articles or finding information, you know, for they use various projects. And, you know, I told her I was, you know, interested in, you know, doing anything, you know, if she had any other help, you know, to do that. Mm-hmm. So when she left, well, she didn't leave that, but she said she was going to do other work, so she wanted me to take over for the One-on-One. And I, yeah, sure. Why not? It sounds fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that was started, I think Texas State Director, and after a while, you know, he couldn't do it any longer, and that was when Cassidy took it over. And then, you know, she passed it on to me. So they thought it's a good way to, you know, preview people within the organization. I know Terry Hinson did it as a stint, I think, in 2014. And then Stu, I think, Bunley, he also was involved with that.
So what exactly?
In 2015.
What exactly does One-on-One represent? What is your article about?
Well, I think it's basically just one person talking to another, one, you know.
One-on-one.
individual, yeah, just one-on-one, you know. And I like to focus on, you know, the individual states and to how they do their, you know, they don't do it differently, you know, investigation, but just kind of something that is just specific to a particular state. Mm. And a lot of times I like to focus on that, like, say, maybe... You know, maybe Montana is a little different than what they do it in Connecticut. You know, it's just some of the maybe geographic things that might, have significance there.
Well, do you just talk to the state directors? Do you just talk to the chief investigators? Or?
Oh, no, just anyway, I've talked to FIs that are even new, all up to state directors and assistant state directors. You know, a few times they've been people that were, they're just involved with, you know, as consultants
mm-hmm.
In that respect.
So you say that different states investigate differently. How so?
Well, no, I didn't mean that they don't do it, you know, differently. I guess I didn't really put that right. I just like to say, is there any way that maybe something is a little different that might be... not really a problem, but just something a little different. Like, say, Colorado is, you know, big open spaces, you know, mountain range. There might be more, you know, physical logistics of getting to, you know, to where the witnesses live. Similar things like that as to what a state in, you know, New York that is more urban, you know.
Right.
That would be. So, but mostly I focus on the people themselves. You know, what is it that brings, what has brought you to MUFON? You know, what is it that maybe, you know, experience like myself, you know, that is, give you that curiosity to, you know, get involved with the organization and, what do you think a good investigator, you know, would be, you know, or if they're in the career, or a lot of people like myself are retired. So, you know, I like to see what aspects of their career and their life experiences they bring into, you know, their work as a, you know, either a field investigator or state director.
So do you focus more on the individual, the investigator, or do you go into the actual investigations? For example, have you talked to investigators about a given case in their state?
It's pretty much based more on the investigator or, you know, the person themselves.
Okay.
But I like to maybe touch on some of the cases, maybe like a favorite case that they have or,
right.
you know, or of a historical case that maybe they would have liked to have been involved with,
mm-hmm.
you know, at one time. You know, a lot of them pick Roswell, of course.
Yeah, right. So, right. That was kind of closed down, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
yeah. Becoming, yeah, over-investigated, that's possibly true, yeah.
Well, no, I mean, at the time, they closed that scene down so quickly and gave that weather balloon excuse so quickly. And, of course, people are going to buy the weather balloon excuse because we didn't have computers. We, you know, the cell phone cameras or anything else. So all they had, well, they first had the report that, yeah, we had we captured one of those discs.
Mm-hmm.
And no, oh, wait a minute. Oh, I wasn't supposed to say that? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So so they closed it down real fast. But
yep.
Like Stanton Friedman and the others pretty much revived it in the 70s. So,
mm-hmm.
And now it's... So as you're speaking with these... with these investigators, what, you know, is there a case that you stands out in your mind that one of them brought up or in their state?
Oh, not that I can really think of offhand that they, yeah, have told me about. Maybe there's been a few cases, I guess, that maybe I've seen, you know, in doing like the military archives, they're...
Tell us about that.
It's been interesting.
Tell us about one of those cases.
Let's see.
Or is that a need-to-know basis? Because
I could probably give you some of the...
My listeners have a need-to-know.
Have a need-to-know, yeah.
Yes,
well, yeah, probably not a lot of information. Some of them that, well, Michigan cases that I had worked on through CAG, you know, one, I think it was case... 2016. No, that's the year. I'm looking at the wrong one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
72442. And that was kind of interesting that it was a CE1 and there were two witnesses, and this was from Manistee and Onondaga County.
CE1. So, what is CE1?
Close Encounter 1. Close Encounter of the First Kind. So that's maybe, I think that's less than 500 feet. You know, or closer.
Oh, okay. So it's a close encounter.
Yeah. Yeah. Close encounter one. So where they saw a saucer shaped object and there was emitting light
mm-hmm.
from its circumference.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe.
So that was just about it. They just saw it, right?
Yeah.
No pictures.
So, yeah, I mean, CE1, I think a lot of them, you know, when you get into, you know, 2, 3, and especially 4 and 5, obviously, a little bit closer.
Yeah.
So those are more the abduction experience.
Yeah, the 5 is being inside the craft, being examined.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get any of those?
I think that there has been... I didn't write any of those down. I actually have one. I just, over the last week, this is the new development since I talked to you a couple of weeks ago, was that through the case assistance group, I am going to be working as a state director for Montana.
Oh.
And I'm going to be helping to rebuild, you know, the MUFON chapter out there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's great.
So there was, so there's like 6 cases out there that, one of them I believe is CE2 and 3 or possibly 3 that I'm, you know, currently are starting to work on investigating that.
So, well, when you work on a case that's out of state, how do you do that? Over the phone? Do you go out to the site? What?
Pretty much, it's over the phone and, you know, over the computer.
Yeah.
Do a lot of that.
Hmm. So how much evidence, shall we say, are you able to garner by phone or computer in a given case? Does that depend on the case?
Right, yeah, it definitely depends on the case. I mean, obviously, any kind of photographic evidence that they have, a lot of times, you know, it's true that what we have to work with is what the witness tells us.
Yeah.
You know, but then I look at, you know, other data, you know, weather data or, you know, radar data if we
mm-hmm.
have it.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And MUFON has branches all over the world, even in Iraq. And you recently
yes.
interviewed our representative in Iraq.
Yeah.
Is that right? Tell us about that.
Yes, the state director for, well, the national director for Iraq is Monique Lassan. And so, yeah, I had the opportunity to do the one-on-one with her a few months back.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And anything, I mean, you know, there's a war going on over there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, are they able to tell a UFO from flying debris from a bomb or... You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I remember kind of broaching some of that with her about what the, you know, perception is of UFOs, you know, in that country, whether it differs, you know, from the United States.
Right.
I mean, that's something I was always curious about, you know, what do the people really think of that?
Mm-hmm.
And she said there really isn't a big awareness, you know, of that whole, you know, the whole thing. So
there is not a big awareness of it?
No, there's not, you know, a lot of, I don't know if it's lack of interest, you know, in the,
or lack
the
of,
subject or not.
Lack
yeah.
of truth. Lack of truth being put out there by the...
yeah, know, that's true, yeah.
Their government. But obviously some people are buying into the UFO phenomenon, or you wouldn't have MUFON there, right?
Oh, right, right, yeah, that's true.
So... I think people get, you know, what they see on the news, and they say, "Oh, Iraq is on fire, the entire country." Well, there's a lot of areas. I mean, what you see is the dramatic war areas on TV, okay? But
yeah.
but there are areas where pretty peaceful, don't you think?
Oh yeah, yeah, I'm sure there are. Yeah. You know, I think we just get the worst of the news, you know.
Well, sure, that's
people try to live their daily lives as best they can, you know,
right.
in those countries. So
okay, so have they had any UFO sightings that of note over there?
I think the one that she mentioned was trying to look it up. And I think that was the one that was pretty much, got a lot of press. I'm trying to find out which one. It's been a little while since I did interview her.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think it was one where the jet that chased the UFO. But
oh, in Iraq?
In Iraq. And I know they do get them, you know, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So otherwise, like you said, we wouldn't really be over there.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And do you think that disclosure will ever come to fruition?
I think so. I think so. Right now, I think the water is being muddied a little bit about the whole disclosure thing.
Why do you say that?
Sometimes maybe there's a lot of disinformation out there that gets out there to try to maybe cover up the facts. Of disclosure, I think
yeah.
it'll happen. You know.
Well, do you think that the government is trying to cover up this fact? I know they have been trying to cover up the fact, but I get the impression that they're slowly trying to let the truth get out about it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get that impression or no?
I think that I wonder sometimes if maybe they're only. There may be some, you know, obviously that know more than the lower, you know, levels of the military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, it's a need-to-know basis, but maybe they don't know any more than we do. Maybe that they, because it's something that they have no control over, that they really don't want to put out in the media, that they really don't know either.
Yeah, I think that they you know, back in 47, they say, when we find out what's going on and we're in control, we'll tell mm-hmm. the people. But that day is yet to come.
Yeah.
Because they're not in control. They never will be in control.
Right. Yep.
When
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, it's like the old story about the humans walking past an anthill. You know, when will the ants ever be in control of humans?
I agree with you on that. Oh, I remember what struck me about, I'm rereading Edward Ruppelt's book, you know, The Report on UFOs, who, you know, for your listeners, of course, he was the head of Project Blue Book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to me, he was pretty open-minded, you know, about the whole thing, you know, and he definitely, and they investigated it on a very strict, level-headed, scientific manner. You know, and in the end, he really didn't have an answer either. But even back in the early 50s, it wasn't a matter of, do they exist? And you hear that now, you know, people, oh, well, you know, are UFOs real? Back in the early 50s, they knew they were real.
Yeah.
They just didn't know what they were. Like, we've come, like, going backwards to say, you know, that people are saying, do they even exist? Are they real? Oh, you know, and they knew back, you know, 40, 50 years ago, yeah, they're real. You mm-hmm. know, we just don't know what they are. We don't know what they do, and we don't know who they belong to.
Yeah.
So we should, you know, maybe at least get back to that point, you know, and start from there.
Well, I think it's obvious that at first they admitted that there was something there. They didn't know what they were, but there was something that people were seeing that was not ours, and nor any country on Earth. And then they had that report from, I'm not going to tell you now, the Brookings Institute. The government paid the Brookings Institute to do a study on how the public might react to the news that we were being visited by extraterrestrials, and they greatly discouraged it. You know, should we tell the people? And no, it's not a smart thing to tell the people. They'll panic. So
right.
they started the disinformation campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, all these flying saucers that weren't real, all of a sudden were real. Now, mm-hmm. you know, you'd think, well, it's going to confuse the people. No, it's not going to confuse the people. What's the what was the last order you received? Don't believe mm-hmm. in them. Okay, so they don't believe in them. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. I need to take one moment again to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And this is We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with UFO investigator and columnist for the MUFON Journal, Marie Cisneros. And what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. Will they ever...
Disinformation, I think.
Disinformation. Will they ever stop this disinformation? You think they will?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if it's in the government's forte to ever, you know, stop the disinformation.
No.
I think it's got to be, you know, to more of a degree than it used to be. And it's easier for them to do, you know, with the internet and, you know, the media out there. There's mm-hmm. so much of it's put out there right now. And people get overwhelmed with but there's just so much information out there. And after a while, you just get tired of listening to it. And you think, I'm just going to tune it out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, like, I don't want talking about political things, you know. I don't know what's true anymore. You know, I'm just not going to listen to any more of it, you know.
And that's
right. And you just kind of let it go, and you don't, you know, pay any attention to any of it. So that's what they're playing, you know, somebody's maybe planned that. I don't know.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that's what their plan was, is to put out so much disinformation that the public throws the baby out with the bathwater and just doesn't believe anything. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So much on YouTube. There's some good video on YouTube of actual UFOs. But
mm-hmm.
I would say a good portion of it, if not the lion's share of it, is just fake. There's, you know, mm-hmm. you can do that on your computer.
Yeah, and, yeah, I agree.
And then when you do have a UFO that's a real UFO, the skeptic's going to say, I can do that on my computer, which you can.
Right.
So you just don't know.
Yeah.
You just don't know. So yeah. I think the only proof positive is in an individual's personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
And until then, it's all hearsay.
Yeah.
So
that's true. It's really hard to get, you know, anyone to even listen about it if they've never even seen a UFO.
Right.
So, you know, like over 3 million people even have the believe they've been abducted. You know,
right.
That's a lot of people.
That's right. But you know, it's hard to believe that people are being abducted, but. I often say that MUFON didn't want to go there when
mm-hmm.
they first started.
Yeah.
But then they realize that if these craft, these nuts and bolts craft are from another, from elsewhere in the universe or another dimension, then they've got to be piloted by someone. Somebody must have made them. Somebody mm-hmm. must be piloting them. So then they start paying attention to the fact that there are occupants. If so, what do those occupants want?
Yeah. Yeah, if it's abject reality then we're looking at, and not a psychological thing or, you know, mythological, yeah, we definitely have to see what it is that's going on. And, you know, abduction experience isn't just been around since, you know, the media or it's,
right.
Not something out of a comic book. It's been around for hundreds of years. You know, just 200 years ago, they said people were abducted by, you know, bad fairies, you know.
Yeah. Even
you know, it's been around a while.
Even Ezekiel was abducted, taken up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
Yes, you was. I have to say that I enjoyed your book several times that I read it.
Thank you.
And I used a lot of the notes and a lot of the information to, you know, do some research, you know, of my own. So that's definitely valuable research. So,
and
the photographs, of the painting, the 15th century painting, that was the first time I'd ever seen that was in your book, The Jesus UFO Connection.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, yeah, there was a lot of, paintings in the Renaissance period that depicted religious scenes with manned UFOs, manned disc-shaped mm-hmm. objects in the background. And where did they get the idea for that? I mean, if it was just one, it would be, you know, it must represent something else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
Again and again and again and again, these hat-shaped objects
mm-hmm.
That are in some of these Renaissance paintings. In the sky, and reports coincide with reports of, I forget where it was, I think it was Greece, that people saw so, quote unquote, so many hats in the sky, so many hats.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they looked like hats,
yeah.
You know, hat
yeah.
shape.
Right.
The Romans called them flying shields because they equated them with their shields that they went off into battle with, and... So it's not just since Roswell, you know?
Yeah, and I know that's always the current, you know, you'll always read a blurb about the UFO. Well, since 1947, the UFO, like, no, actually, it's been around a lot longer than that. You know,
yeah.
Jacques Vallée has been, you know, and Passport to Magonia, you know, talked about incidents that happened in the early 1800s, even before, you know, manned flight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, possibly they were balloons, but I mean, they've been going on a long time.
Right.
Or, you know, Christopher Columbus saw, it was either a USO, you know, a submerged vehicle that went up into the sky back in, you know, 1492, wrote about it in ship's logs.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, there's been a lot of USOs that have been reported, and people just say, oh, that's just marine mythology, you know, like mermaids, You know, those were just fish, whales, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So probably the mermaids, but then there was the whale that swallowed Jonah. Here we go
again.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny. I was just going to say the same thing, and I was Jonah and the whale. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think she could have lived that long in a,
No.
In a whale's stomach. But what do I know, you know?
Right.
What do we know?
Yeah.
But we're finding out. We're finding out. So what else would you like to tell us about MUFON or MUFON cases, your own experiences?
Oh, gosh. We talk a little bit longer here.
Yeah.
Maybe I could do a little plug for the Montana chapter.
Okay.
I know that currently there's, I guess there's only like one or two FIs that are out there. So what I'm trying to do is, you know, help rebuild the chapter. So, you know, they're going to need people out there for, in Montana to do these cases. You know, like right now I can do, you know, a lot with, you know, I started a Facebook page for It's MUFON of Montana, you know, to get people interested, you know, in the chapter out there. But obviously I live in Michigan, so Montana sounds interesting, but I don't think I want to move out there right now. So we're going to rebuild the chapter out there and get, you know, we need a state director and, you know, assistant, you know, chief investigator and all of that. So there's a lot of interesting things going on in, you know, UFOlogy in Montana. From what I've seen, I looked up, there's like 282 cases there have been, you know, reported and completed. So right now there's been six just over the past month.
Hmm.
So, I mean, there's stuff going on out there in Montana that needs to be investigated. So, I mean, if any of your listeners know, you know, anyone that wants to get involved with, you know, MUFON, you know, they live in Montana, would be interested in, you know, becoming an FI.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely need the people, or and even members, you know, and there was want to start up a chapter out there so they can have meetings, you know, and find out all the newest events that are going on out there.
Yeah, well, this is broadcast in Montana as well on the computer.
Okay, good.
It's even broadcast in Iraq, so if you're in Iraq and...
Cool.
Keep your eye on the sky over there. I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
Sometimes
they do.
Even more.
Ireland.
Huh?
Even in Ireland, I think the last interview I did was, oh gosh, I can't think of his last name at the moment. His name is Michael, and he's, I think, Assistant State Director of Ireland, or United Kingdom.
Mm.
Oh, you know, there's activity going on over there, too.
Oh, there's a lot of activity going on.
Yeah.
And we've had Rendlesham Forest mentioned on this, you know, and Peter Robbins.
Yeah, Peter Robbins.
We had him on the show, and left at East Gate. And so
he's one of my Facebook friends.
Is he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's been in town a couple times, and I played chauffeur to him, and and it's just
I would like to meet him sometime.
Oh
so.
Yeah, he's just a real sweetheart of a guy, I tell you.
Yeah.
Down to earth, and just wants to befriend you, and you know,
mm-hmm.
as long as you're nice to him, he's just. And wants to tell you all about the UFO phenomenon and how he got involved. And it's just fascinating. He's like an uncle. He seems like an uncle to me, you know? So, at any rate, enough of him. we're talking about Rendlesham Forest and the cases in the UK. So, have you talked with anyone in the UK for your one-on-one?
I don't have my note here to... I had some notes, and I don't know if I wrote them down here, but he was one of my interviewees just recently. I believe he's in the July issue. So, he is from the United Kingdom,
mm-hmm.
and he does all of it. Because I think he lives in Ireland, but he's for the whole United Kingdom. But I don't know that we talked about any specific cases at all.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think that he mentioned the Rendlesham. I can't even say it. You know what I mean?
Rendlesham. Rendlesham.
Yeah. Incident.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's another one that has been beating a dead horse, you know?
Yeah, there is a lot about that, you know, and it seems like you see a lot of, shows about that, not so much Ancient Aliens, but there's, a couple of programs and things on YouTube, and, they talk about the UFO phenomenon, and you get the same cases over and over and over again,
yeah.
You know, and they are, you know, they've gotten just, too much press, because there's a lot of other cases that are just as interesting, you know, and just as inexplicable as those.
Yeah, but at the same time, those are the, Rendlesham Forest those are the cornerstone cases, you know?
True.
So
that's true.
They make the cornerstone of the UFO phenomenon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're excellent cases. I mean, there are a lot of them that, there's some of the, I guess if you're, if you're the type of person that wants to deny the whole thing, then you're just going to, let the evidence go. But I think there definitely is some really good evidence there.
Yeah. Yeah, I was on Rob McConnell's show as a guest, and he asked me about my sighting and about MUFON and this, that, and the other. And we had a nice little talk, and then about 10 minutes left in the show, he says, "Where's your proof?" Where's my proof? Well, I had it here a minute ago. I'll show you over the radio. What are you talking about? Where's my proof? And and I listened to another one of his shows about the ranch where everything's wild is happening on it. Anyway, some other show. Where's your proof? He did the same thing. So yeah, the X Zone. Have you heard of the X Zone?
No.
Rob McConnell. So he wants to know where my proof is, and I don't know as if that's the way he conducts his shows or not. But he did with me. He did with this other one. Another show. Where's your proof?
Maybe you should have told them, well, do you got another hour or so? Maybe we'll discuss
the
proof.
Oh, my goodness,
because, there's archaeological evidence. I don't know about proof. Maybe that's the word, the difference in the use. It's like there's evidence. There's significant evidence.
Right.
Archaeological evidence, historical evidence, witness evidence, physical evidence. But any of that evidence, if you're a denier, if you don't want to believe it, you're just going to blow it off, and you're going to say, you're not. That's not. Doesn't mean anything. So I mean, that's just. You can do that with any kind of evidence.
That's right.
The person has.
Ted Phillips has all kinds of. He was on the show, and he has all kinds of physical evidence. Well, I didn't ask him to present it here on the radio. Where's your proof?
Yeah.
He's got all kinds of proof. And when I say proof, and who W.C. Levengood is, crop formations and cattle mutilations.
Yeah,
he told me personally. He says you don't say proof; you say strong evidence.
Right.
Strong evidence.
I would agree with it. So.
Because I guess like I say, the only real proof is when you have your own experience. That's all the proof you need.
That's true. Direct experience.
Yeah.
And that's what really makes a big difference to the individual, and it sometimes it sends you on your own search, to find out what it is.
That's
exactly
right.
And I mean, I think a lot of people in MUFON, I usually try to ask everyone, with the one-on-one, what brought you to MUFON?
Right.
Do you have any experience, in your life that made you want to do this,
right?
Did it. And one of the things I also like to find out is how did it change, or when you have a significant case, how did it change your belief system? For
right.
UFOs,
right?
Or the abduction phenomenon. What did that tell you? you know, after you did one case or whatever amount of cases. So,
Marie, is there anywhere that we can go to check out your work, or you have a website, or?
I don't have my own website. That would be nice.
Get a website.
I can find me on Facebook. I'm just under my own name, just Marie Cisneros. I'm on Facebook. The MUFON Journal, one-on-one, the e-journal, you know. Mm-hmm. I believe you do have to be a member, or I think you, I don't know how you buy the other, you know, the journals. But,
right.
That's pretty much it, you know.
Check out your one-on-one.
Someone has someone that they want to see in the one-on-one, they can contact me. It's Marie Helena, 777@gmail.com.
Very good. Marie, thank you so much for joining us today. And hope we get back and join us again sometime.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on your show.
Okay.
I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
We'll do lunch again.
Okay, good.
All right.
And
bye-bye.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. Please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. So until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
You're listening to 89.3 FM, WHFR, Dearborn.
Yo, guys and dolls, you are at the malt shop with Daddy G. And we're going back to the 50s and 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop, where the jukebox is playing and the kids are dancing. And here we are, back in the 50s.
Get that swing, past 16, just been kissed, graduated and got that twist, the kind of love you can't resist, at 17, now sloppy